Hello, and welcome to episode 319 of the PC Gamer Podcast. Today is Friday, June 8th, and I am your host, PC Gamer Senior Editor Josh Augustine. With me today are Editor-in-Chief Logan, a kitty cat stole my voice, Decker.
Hello.
Executive Editor Evan, arma me anything, Lottie.
Logan, that was like Max Payne. That was pretty, at least you mentioned, Josh mentioned kittens, and you come out with Max Payne. That was nice.
I walked into the podcast room. I was feeling down. I need a painkiller.
Associate Editor Tyler, no city is big enough to contain me wild.
Ah, I see the theme here.
Yeah. You did? It's E3 theme.
Ooh.
Oh, is it?
Ooh.
And intern TJ, I drink mead from a Viking horn heifer.
True story.
It is incredible. All right, so the news, E3 happened this week. We are going to talk about it. So the way we're going to do this, I'm just going to introduce a game or a specific part of a game or something like that, and we're just going to talk about what we thought about it. Round table, free for all, whatever you want.
I need a painkiller.
Again.
You are not allowed to say that to every single time. I'm just going to nix that right now. All right, first up, Watch Dogs is aiming to out Deus Ex. Deus Ex.
Oh my god.
And I think it might even out Hitman.
Whoa. Yeah.
It was probably the best Hitman game there, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to out Splinter Cell too. It's going to out everything.
Well, Ubisoft has like this family of mechanics that they seem to transfer from every game, like the marking mechanic. Mm-hmm. It's in Rainbow Six. I think it's in Far Cry even a little bit. Far Cry 3. What else? It is in Splinter Cell, obviously. Does Hitman? No, that's not an Ubisoft game.
And there's also the free running that we saw, which comes over from Assassin's Creed. Is it the same engine as Assassin's Creed?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Actually,
it could be.
Does someone
probably.
So were you guys kind of there when it was revealed, or did you guys see the trailer or anything in person?
Just watching the press conference. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the big. So if you didn't catch Watch Dogs, go watch. There's like a 7-minute gameplay cut online. Go watch that video. Please, it was like the biggest thing to come out of E3. The most surprising thing, I should say. That's more accurate.
Right, I'd agree with that.
And it's futuristic. It seems like you're playing this hacker character, and the trailer basically shows, the footage basically shows, you know, he's infiltrating this sort of art show, this art gallery, to catch the attention of a target. They're assassinated, it seems like. And there's all this dynamic information that he's using. Like, he has a cell phone, and just as he's walking through this crowd, he's like picking up, you know, like, this person got rejected on their credit card loan or something, or on their credit card, or this person is a sex offender or something. Like, he's seeing all these information pop up about just random people in the crowd. And he uses, at one point, he has to like identify who his target's like associate is by like sort of.
If I can, I'll put in just a little backing, like sort of information. I think that I remember the concept that they just kind of put out at the beginning was, you know, all the systems in the world are now connected. Everything, your phone, electrical grids, you know, cable transmissions, radio broadcasts, satellite stuff, all that stuff is connected. And if it's all connected, it's all accessible. And somehow this one dude has access.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is the idea, sorry, just because the name Watch Dogs makes me think that he's like a government agent that's like Big Brother. Is that kind of the idea, or is this like a rogue agent?
That's still unclear. Was that made clear to you, where he's coming from and why he has this power?
Not at all. I think what is unclear is mechanically, you know, Ubisoft has said it's an open world game, but how open is it? And okay, I mean, the most spectacular thing that they showed, right? So this is where the Hitman side of it comes in. He purposely, within this like art gallery show party, purposely, like, his plan is to like get the attention of his target, who's actually not there, and he like gets their attention by sort of like, you know, punching one of the guards or something, and he listens in on this phone conversation where his target's saying like, "I'll be right there, keep him there." And he's talking about you. So he, you know, the main character walks out in the street, and, you know, already anticipating that his target's car is coming down the street, uses this wheel of options comes up, like all these different hacking options, not sure what all of them do, hits one of them and changes, I think, both of the lights of an intersection to green. So as his target's car is coming down the street, of course, it gets T-boned, all the cars get stuck there, and a gunfight breaks out. So the question is there's the implication that, oh, I could have done X, Y, or Z. I could have waited inside and hacked something else, or I could have, I don't know, stolen a car and come after him. Who knows? Like, you know, they only showed this one option, this one solution to this problem. And with these types of games, you know, with Deus Ex, we're kind of used to like a stealth aggressive and like, I don't know, some middle ground approach.
Technical, maybe.
Yeah, technical hacking approach. And, you know, they're sort of hinting like, oh, you can kind of do whatever you want, but, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah. I mean,
actually, can I just jump in for a sec? Because I remember when you changed those light signals and I saw it was just such a punch in the gut. He was walking by, he's going toward, you know, his goal. And this happened, I saw the demo a couple times, and it happened differently both times. But in one, he walks by the door, and he yanks open a car door, and inside you see a man who's trying to resuscitate his wife after the accident. And it's just that little piece of embroidery that's just, ugh! You know, that was a direct consequence of your actions in there, and somebody is dead, and he is trying to, you know, oh, God, it was just devastating.
And at one point in the video, you actually pulled, he saved a civilian.
Yeah, so that happened differently in two different demos I saw. He did pull the guy out.
And this wasn't a cutscene. It was like, no. You know, you could open the door, and there was a single button tap to rescue this guy or not. And, it didn't, like, you know, no morality points popped up or anything like that. No idea if that there's a system for that sort of thing, but, you know, a nice touch.
Oh, it was it was just devastating. Ugh.
So, to me, yeah, struck me as, you know, they did not show a lot of the open world at all. But, you know, the highest version, the most ambitious version of the game it could turn up to be, is like Hitman, Deus Ex, GTA, all in one.
You betcha.
Which would be incredible.
You know what made it, I think, for me, the most, easily, by far, by miles, the best demo of E3? What made it that was because every moment you were always asking, why, how do you do that? How is that possible? How do you make a game in which you can basically control all the systems of the world? That's too much freedom. You know, how do you still make it interesting, and how do you bring the storyline along? You know, it just brought up all these questions, and they teased so much. And yeah, maybe they'll do it. Maybe it won't succeed as well as we thought. But what a demo, because you just think about the possibilities.
Yeah.
I didn't see this myself, but you did the multiplayer bit at the end of the demo. Can you?
Oh no,
you
know, I didn't actually.
Oh, I did.
That was Tyler, right?
It pulls out at the end, and we see that there are other agents around the city.
Right.
And it's not clear if those when they showed the demo, it wasn't clear are those NPC agents that I'm working with, but I believe they came out and said it will be co-op multiplayer. So. Yeah, and it looks like you can switch between agents. That's kind of what the demo looked like. I wasn't sure.
Weird.
But see, I just want to know more. I want to how did these stories affect each other then if they are two people? And, you know, I saw them controlling using an iPad as a supplementary screen, a supplemental screen to look at maps. And just like, you know, we're all used to using them. You can zoom into the map. You can look up dossiers on people so you get some backgrounder on them as you're still playing the game. Hmm. You know, how much integration? Tell me more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, with co-op and with all that kind of like hacking and stuff, you can just see the potential for like an awesome heist mission. Integrated voice chat where like someone is out hacking all the streetlights to clear the way for someone else who's driving the car and someone is on the inside working.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would just be really cool.
Well, I think we heard this a lot from fans of open world games that they really liked Saints Row because you felt empowered. You know, you could do things. It wasn't just about go on a mission, get in trouble, shoot my way out, like is the case in almost every Grand Theft Auto mission. As much as like there's some cool authenticity there, it's kind of you're sort of limited because you're an everyday kind of guy that just kind of happens to get in a lot of trouble. But with this set of powers that's being implied by the video, you know, it's this middle ground between an authentic sci-fi, semi, you know, near future setting, but you know, you have these sort of superhero like hacking powers to manipulate, have fun, be playful, but it's still a very serious type of game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems that way at least. I mean, the first thing I'm going to do is see if I can, how much trouble I can cause. You know, like, can I bring down an airliner in the middle of the city?
Right.
Oh, that sounds terrible. I'm sorry. Well, I need to rethink that.
All right.
But still, I would. That was one of the first things I would do.
Thank you for enabling that.
You are a terrible person, both of you.
You're on CIA watch lists now.
Anyway. Oh, I could just imagine being like being on trial in front of a bunch of digital NPCs, you know, and like, no, I didn't mean it.
Digital NPCs.
I didn't know.
That's funny. I mean, we don't want to overhype this, but it's honestly kind of rare that a new and actually surprising game gets announced at E3 proper that we have not heard before, that we have not had teased to us before.
Yeah.
All these big publishers are trying to preempt each other these days. They'll announce something a week out, 2 weeks out, a month out, or they'll do it afterward just to sort of, you know, play that poker game of not getting caught up.
This is also the very, very, very best kind of hype, you know? It's not just like, oh, look, we shot 100,000 people and we used the F word 1,000 times and blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, hey, look at what we did. And everybody was sitting there going, how? Tell me more.
Sure.
I want to know more. You know, how are you going to do all these things? What? Those are promises are outrageous, you know? That's the best kind of hype, the one that makes you just salivate for more.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I promise not all of them are going to be like this, but the next one, Dishonored, is aiming to out BioShock BioShock.
Oh man, it's aiming to out Half-Life 2, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's got those walkers, right, Tyler?
Yeah. I mean, it does have
some familiar enemies.
Yeah. I mean, one of the lead artists on Half-Life 2 is directing the art there, so it does look a little Half-Life-y. I didn't actually get to play it. I didn't get a chance at E3, but I believe it was playable. So we'll probably have more on that.
The trailer looked very much like BioShock Infinite. Like, it had a bunch of, like, the demo had, like, a rat fight that seemed very reminiscent of, like, the crow fight from the earlier demo.
You could have told me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, well, you can summon plague rats that will swarm and eat people. You can possess animals to become a rat and run around through. So, yeah, there's cool. There's a lot of stuff.
You could have told me that it was, like, you know, the spiritual sequel to BioShock 2, and I would have gone right along with it. I have to say, I mean, there were a lot of impressive aspects to it, but it did leave me kind of cold. I played the demo for quite a while. There are so many ways to, to finish your objectives, and I've always loved the combination of you've got your, like, a crossbow and magic, you know, that you can use at the same time. I think one of the things that really sort of capped it in the knees for me was the writing, which I just thought, you know, listening in to the bustle of the city and trying to pick up on, you know, how well it was realized, and like the way people talk to each other was very unconvincing and seemed flat and unimaginative. But again, it's one demo. It's very early, withholding judgment. A lot of people were very, very much dazzled by it and loved the freedom that you got, but I was left kind of a bit cold.
All right, there you go. All right, next up, Assassin's Creed 3 has boats. You steer them and shoot cannons.
It's going to outboat boats.
It's going to out pirates. It admires pirates.
I heard some complaints
7 years ago
about that. Like, why does Assassin's Creed need the vehicles, this and that? Like, that was the worst part when you're on the carriage and like Brotherhood. But that looks amazing. You have the steering wheel of this massive ship, and you're trying to, you know, align your side, you know, to the attacking ship, and then just volleys of cannons. That looks like fun.
Yeah, I'd like to point out the carriage in Assassin's Creed 2 did not have a cannon on it.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. That looks like, and it didn't look like a quick time event. It looked like you're tactically sort of steering the ship, and it's probably a small part of the game, but I thought it looked neat.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I didn't play Assassin's Creed 2. I played Assassin's Creed 1. But the thing that was missing was a lack of diversity. Like, I like the idea that, oh, this boat is going to break it up, so I'm not constantly jumping on rooftops and doing stuff like that. I like that, you know, even if it's not great, it's kind of like, it reminds me of the Mass Effect. What was the name of that? The little vehicle that you'd cruise around
Mako.
On? The Mako. Like, I liked that just because it broke up the gameplay.
Right,
it was different.
Right,
yeah.
Right. One thing I noticed while I was watching the Assassin's Creed demo was, I kept doing double takes because I kept thinking to myself, wait a minute, you know, the guy jumps into the crook of a tree, like, you know, where two branches meet. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. You know, there's an invisible wall there. You're not supposed to be able to jump, you know, into a diagonal little crevice and then leap around from that. And it just kept doing things that we've never been able to, that I just assumed you can't do in games. And it's that kind of just sort of open-mindedness. And because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, from the developer's perspective, I'm thinking, you know, these things don't happen easily, you know? Yeah. And somebody had to be there going, we have to make this work. You know, it's an organic environment. It's very woodsy. You know, it's not the future. You know, there's trees everywhere, and you should be able to navigate them. Yeah. We have to make this work. That probably took a lot of pushing and a lot of time.
No, I mean, that in particular stuck out to me. You know, they only showed one route of entry. You know, they showed an assassination mission in the trailer where you're, like, approaching this fort. And you're just bounding through these trees effortlessly. I mean, think about the work that has to go into, like, okay, the trees have to look like trees, right? They have to look like trees, but they have to be readable, kind of like Mirror's Edge. We have to say, like, okay, that's a long branch I'm going to go on. Then I'm going to transition into this one. That's
readable, perfect
to the right
word.
Side.
Right.
And, of course, like, it has to feel effortless, but not so effortless that it doesn't feel like work and kind of, like, risk-reward and challenging.
Yeah.
That's so hard. I mean, you can do that with artificial structures so easily because you can just make them whatever they need to be. But when they're trees and it has to, like, be in this believable, you know, 17th century...
Character interaction with organic objects has always been difficult. That's why so much stuff is... It's a square building with concrete.
Right.
Because swinging on trees is... There are so many, you know, branches and scraggly bits coming out. It's kind of the same reaction we had to Watchdog in that it's like, you're not supposed to be able to do that. How did you make it so that they could cause a traffic accident and, like, kill people? And, like, how do you make it so that you can jump into any tree? So that's exciting.
Remember, I don't know if you guys played the Resident Evil 6 demos, but, you know, you couldn't go down a hallway because of a whiteboard on an A-frame was blocking your way. And
oh, man.
It just, yeah.
That's the kind of thing that's
the power,
like,
of dry erase, you know.
We're seeing stop, you know. I love being surprised in games when I can do something that I'm like, no, games don't allow you to do that. That's not how games work.
Yeah, man.
And when you change my understanding of game conventions, I think you're doing something pretty awesome. So I'm really excited for 3, Assassin's Creed.
Definitely.
Awesome. All right, so these next ones kind of get a little into truthiness or falsity kind of status.
That's
so
cool.
They don't necessarily represent my own opinion, so don't hurt me if
you
disagree.
You don't need no disclaimer. Come on.
All right. XCOM Enemy Unknown is the best XCOM game currently in development.
I'll go first. Yeah, true. True, it absolutely is. I mean, my main complaint about the XCOM, the shooter, is that it went through this early stage, which actually looked really promising, Bioshock-like, like detective work that you're doing, where you're fighting those blobs, if you guys remember that, like, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally changed it, put in humanoid enemies, made it much more like Mass Effect cover-based stuff, plausible, like, power-based combat with squad members. It seemed like they were really forcing it, you know, pop-up target-style enemies is a long answer, sorry. But yes, absolutely. Especially because in the E3 demo, which was super short, like 5 minutes long, out of your space shuttle, out of your transport craft, came a little man named Sid Meier. In-game, his face in-game, superimposed over one of the soldiers, dressed in this, like, tight, high-tech body armor, like, with, like, psychic powers.
What?
So, if that turns out to be an actual, like, playable character.
Yeah. Meyer's a playable character.
Or skin or DLC or whatever.
Well, does that sound like maybe you couldn't put your own, like, face onto stuff? So, because it's all about, you make your crew members your friends all the time. So
yeah,
could I put, like, Evan's face on it or something?
They haven't talked about that at all. I don't know if that's the case. I think it's more likely that they'll just have a lot of faces. We do know that, like, you can determine the nationality of, or maybe it's determined for you, of your troops. They have this little flag in the back of their, on their back of their armor.
Nice.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
I will say, just looking at kind of the base and kind of looking at it showed it from the side as like a plate dollhouse cutout, essentially, of your base. And you can see everything.
Yeah.
And, like, the aliens that are trapped are, like, banging against the walls trying to get out and stuff. Like, I could just watch that, like, all day.
It's a wonderful ant farm. I was talking to DayZ's creator, Dean Hall, at E3, who's a huge XCOM fan, I guess. So I was like, hey, you like permadeath? He's like, yes. And he's like, yeah, did you see that? I'm like... So I was like, have you watched the trailer? He's like, no. I'm like, go watch a trailer. Go see this incredible base design that they've come up with, this cross-section. It is the perfect design. I mean, it's an at-a-glance kind of view. You have a sense of what's going on in your base, and you can sort of see everything at once, all the different activity happening. Firaxis is so good at those sort of small animations that just kind of bring the world to life and make you feel at home.
Yeah.
It's just ripping off Sim Tower, so whatever.
I would say yes to that, definitely.
Yeah.
Just for the reason you just look at it and you can't wait to dig into that anthill. Whereas the shooter, yeah, interesting, but interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd love to know, but at least looking at it, it feels like it has at least the same budget of the shooter. I don't know. I mean, that's a crazy thing to say.
Yeah, they certainly look that way to me.
Maybe it's just like we don't expect the production value to be that high for a turn-based strategy game, but man, like great assets, great particle effects.
Yep.
Really, really good looking game for something that is going to be multi-platform.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. I'll keep it shorter. Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned the DayZ guy. So there was a rumor going around that he has been hired full-time by Bohemia to work on DayZ. Do you know if that's true?
Well, he is an Arma 3 developer. He works at Bohemia for sure and has been since January. But, you know, I don't think he's working on it necessarily full-time. Remains to be seen. They didn't really give me a clear answer on that when I asked about it. He does do stuff like playtest Arma 3. We talked a lot about that. He's technically a multiplayer Arma 3 designer. But I think it's fair to say he's spending a lot of time on that.
Cool. So you did a Q&A for kind of Arma 3. What's the biggest thing that came out with Arma 3?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of greater accessibility. I mean, anybody I talk to that sort of likes the idea of Arma 3 existing, that has had trouble playing it for understandable reasons.
Hi.
Hey, Tyler, how's it going? That's you. You know, the controls are a little wacky. The inventory system's a little wacky. They're really addressing that very directly. A good example of that would be, so between the campaigns, this is actually how the, between the campaign missions, and this is how the campaign's going to run, you'll go back to this, like, base camp, you know, sort of a hub. So you'll be able to, like, walk up to a firing range, go to the briefing, your next mission, go to the graves of the soldiers that have been killed throughout your campaign. Like, that'll show up persistently based on, like, if they actually die in that mission.
The graveyard will just grow and grow and grow.
Man, I hope not. But, you know, you can just sort of seamlessly move between these things, and you just hit one button, you hit space bar to jump into them. That's nice. But beyond that, it is an incredibly good-looking game, and it runs smoothly. Okay, so I asked them, okay, what hardware are you using to run on the show floor? Because this is Arma 3 was running smoother than I'd ever seen Arma 2 run. You know, at least 50 to 60 frames, flawlessly. Usually within Arma 2, you're like, right-click to zoom in, for example, and that just changes the field of view immensely. And you usually experience, like, some stuttering if there's a lot of enemies in the background or something. If you throw a grenade, sometimes you might, like, drop a frame or two. None of that was happening for me.
Wow.
And they were running a single 580, GTX 580, which, that's a great card, but not two of them, nothing too exotic, mm-hmm. right? And a Core i7 at 3.2 gigahertz and 4 gigs of RAM. So, you know, nothing, not something you would have bought 2 years ago, certainly, but not a computer made of gold.
Awesome. All right. South Park, The Stick of Truth is going to be genuinely funny.
I think it has the opportunity to do that. Is it? I don't know.
Who's developing that? I don't remember.
That is...
it's not Obsidian. That's the other South Park game.
That's horrible. I don't remember right now.
Jeopardy music. Right,
everyone,
here.
Get out your phones. I did enjoy at the Microsoft conference. Was it Trey Parker who was poking fun at Microsoft?
Yeah,
I was amused because Microsoft's going on about Microsoft Glass, and Trey comes out and says,
"Yeah,
you're going to be able to play it on a tablet while in your fridge." I don't remember.
How exciting! I mean. Yeah, is the other South Park game?
It is Obsidian
on PC. Wait, it is Obsidian.
It is Obsidian.
Is that the game I'm thinking of? Because Obsidian
threw me off. I was going to say Obsidian.
I don't know if he's on the team, but Chris Avellone is just a prolific and fantastic writer. I mean, Baldur's Gate and those things, Alpha Protocol, which I thought was like funny and clever. I don't like South Park, but sure.
I mean, they came out and said, we want it to feel like you're playing an episode of South Park. So if you like South Park and they succeed, I think it'll be funny. So,
all right. The Old Republic is making the right move by increasing the level cap and adding a new planet before the year ends.
Josh, go ahead.
Well, let me ask you, Josh. Yeah. Are they simply adding stuff that should have been in at launch?
No. Okay. No. Yeah. No, because a new level cap is a huge deal. It's usually not done. Like, this will be the fastest, I think, any MMO has added it after launch.
That I know of.
Yeah, because the trouble with level caps is when you add a level cap, all of the existing endgame content is now worthless. It's just thrown out. No, I don't think it is. There you go. Bam. Right. No, it's a terrible decision.
I agree. As a very active tour player, I think it's way too early. Especially, I mean, I guess it kind of depends on how they handle it. On, like, if they're adding five new levels, then it's not that much of a power difference, and maybe like the current tier of gear, which is the campaign gear, can still get you into the entry level stuff with the increased level cap. That I would kind of be okay with, but if it's a total gear reset, this is way too early to do that.
But you're not saying no to new content, right?
No.
New content is great, and they need to add new content. They need to start adding it faster, but it should be at the same level. Because the trouble is, so you have a small number of people that are still playing. Earlier this week, I logged onto my server. There were 105 people on the entire server, only 30 players on Republic. Wow. So when I logged in there was no one within 10 levels of me on the entire server. Oh, like, that is just bad.
And it's not universal.
It's not
universal. I play on a very healthy server. There are a couple, maybe not a couple dozen, but at least a dozen pretty healthy servers. And I think that's the server transfers are trying to bring.
Yeah, they're going
to
start merging servers next week, so that's going to help. But the trouble is, like, people are very concerned about the state of this game. And I know a lot of people that are playing that are asking me, like, should I keep playing? Is this game going to be around? Is it going to be good? And the way to absolutely not console them is to say, oh, don't worry, we're throwing out everything that exists before the end of the year. Like, what? Why am I even playing? Like, this is going to be worthless within 6 months. But, all right, that one's done. StarCraft II Arcade will spawn another genre as popular as Dota.
Oh, man, great question. I'm not going to answer it first, though.
I'm going to volunteer Tyler.
No, that's a bad idea because I didn't hear any of this news.
Okay, so StarCraft Arcade, they announced it at BlizzCon last year. So what it is essentially it's a tab within the game, and you click the tab, and then it shows all custom games. And you can create custom maps, load them on there, you can play everything. You can join any custom map, and it automatically downloads it for you. And it's basically a way just to share custom maps. One of the ones that I saw that came out that I thought was awesome, it's basically they're rebuilding the original Diablo in StarCraft II using Warcraft assets.
Wow. Sorcery.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so it's like combining all of Blizzard's titles. But that's just like the first thing that people have been doing. So stuff like the StarCraft MMO that people were trying to build a while back, that'll be that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there's actually like a first-person shooter paintball thing with Marines that somebody made that's pretty awesome looking.
Yeah.
I mean, as popular as Dota, that was the question.
Yeah.
Man, that's so tough. I mean, Dota was originally came out in 2003. Obviously, has been seeing a lot of different variations and iterations since then. It's tough. I don't know. I mean, I want to say like, well, there were like fewer like high level mods back then, so kind of the best stuff bubbled to the top. I don't know, but at the same
time, arcade, like, I'm sure does have a rating system.
Yeah, and I mean, like the tools are so much richer. I mean, we talk about sometimes how like the last hitting mechanic came about as a result of the limitations of the engine, and that's stuck around, for example. So, man, I don't know. Maybe. God, I don't know. That'd be awesome.
I'll say I would like it, too. Yeah. I mean, it's always fun.
Yeah,
Tower defense. We've got, MOBA-style games and all this from stuff people made. Specifically with Blizzard titles, they tend to be good at that. So, you know, I would really love to see something new.
I'd like to see it bring back some of the Dota variants because, like, I'm going to put on my hipster hat and say I was in, like, the Warcraft 3 custom map scene when Dota was first getting popular. And my favorite variants of Dota were always the ones where you could, like, upgrade your minion spawners and in some cases even choose what kind of minions you want to spawn. Like, I want more archers but less melee guys. And the trend sort of went towards you just worry about your hero. But the ones I liked were the ones where you had more control over your towers and your spawners and stuff like that. Like to see some of that coming back in style.
Awesome. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say, after all that excitement, I just don't think this will make me look bad. I can't think of a new genre. Like, I feel like we're getting close to tapped out on genres. Essentially, all the new genres are just merging existing genres. So I don't think I think they'll come up with a cool game that'll probably be as popular as Dota, but I don't think it's going to be as revolutionary that like spawns its whole offset. There you have it.
We could be surprised.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. Please prove me wrong.
For sure.
All right. The PC, quote unquote, won E3.
Oh gosh, I wouldn't say so because it's not really about that. E3 is about pouring hundreds of millions of dollars to keep your platform alive. And, you know, that's just not something you have to do for the PC. But it also means that, you know, you're not going to see these splashy press conferences because it's not something that you have to keep pumping money into to keep it alive. And you have to bring on Aisha or, you know, whoever to, hey, look, this is still cool. This is still awesome. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, better with Kinect, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's, you know, so it's, you know, the pomp and circumstance and spectacle and all that is can be fun, but.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you want to think about E3 as some sort of like, okay, it's a poker tournament and you have to pay $1 million to get into it. And Nintendo pays $1 million and Sony pays $1 million and Microsoft pays $1 million. And, you know, they play a game of poker. The PC does not play that game. I mean, it shows up at the party, it hangs out.
Yeah, the PC's at the bar talking to a bunch of people, having a good time.
Talking to the hot chicks, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
only
PC's like the suave, kind of debonair guy.
Only the attractive ones.
Dressed. Yeah.
The PC had a great showing at E3. I mean, one of the stories we're hearing people talk about, it's not something new, but a lot of developers were, showing the PC version of the game, like Borderlands 2, for example, but handing you an Xbox controller and like, wow, look at all this this nice anti-aliasing and the resolution, and wow.
Yeah.
And sort of like covertly not
telling
you it's an Xbox.
Some talk about that with various games being shown, where they're like, they handed me an Xbox controller, but it looked so good. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was on PC.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a great example. You know, Sony's poured bajillions of dollars into its press conference, but for all that money and all that time, you didn't hear a peep, not one word about PlanetSide 2, right? But let me tell you, PlanetSide 2 got a huge footprint on the floor, you know, because again, it's about pouring money to keep your platform alive. That's what, you know, this industry event is all about. But when it came to, you know, showing off the game and saying, hey, you know, because they know it's, you know, how passionate people are about PlanetSide 2. And they know that, you know, the PC is a place where just communities just have already gathered around, you know, that idea. And it's going to be talked about and it's going to thrive no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you bring a quality game, you know, you can make it happen, but it's not something you have to worry about keeping alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Sony Online is, to continue to use a poker metaphor, they are all in on PlanetSide 2, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But
yeah.
Right.
I was already completely sold on this game, but oh my goodness, they're doing some incredible stuff, which we'll talk about later.
Right. Yeah. So the conference was about, hey, this is what we have got to do to keep this thing alive. But when it came down to the show floor, it's like, check out this game. Look at what we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think the perception at the PC one kind of came from how sad all of the press conferences were this year.
That's
Ubisoft did well, but
Ubisoft was the
holders,
one that thought was a pretty solid, but the rest were not.
I guess we're supposed to pronounce it Ubisoft, aren't we?
We are Ubisoft.
Is that
ubiquitous?
Is it really?
What?
It's like the word ubiquitous.
Wow.
Ubisoft.
Oh,
pardon me.
Weird.
Ubi.
They're French. No,
sounds like a vegetable.
Ubi. Let them have it. Yeah.
Let them have it.
Can I have extra Ubi?
All right. 2012 is the year of free to play. Because I saw this in a few headlines about E3, and it kind of struck me as odd because I thought we've already had the year of free to play.
Same. Yeah.
False. I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's been ramping up. I actually had a conversation with a guy because it was outside of booth, and he was a journalist. I don't remember his name from a European publication, and he was talking like I might have been talking like 4 years ago about free to play. Like, I don't know, I'm not really into it. Like, I was excited to see like PlanetSide 2 because it's like a free to play game that actually looks really good, like really AAA. And I'm like, dude, I'm Tribes and Team Fortress 2 and even way back for Quake Live, a browser based game, really fun for, you know.
I had a very similar conversation.
I felt really weird having that conversation because in the office we sit here and go, oh man, free to play is great. There's so much cool stuff coming out, but then I get, you know, maybe it's not as widespread. as I thought, as far as maybe the world view about it?
You know, I think we've yet to see the year of free-to-play in a serious way, at least in North America, but we're going to see it. And
is this the year?
No, this is okay. Not the year. It was huge last year. It's even bigger this year. But I think we've not even come close to what we're going to see as being the year of free-to-play. Although yet another hint bubbled up today when Chavat Yerli I was reading an interview. I can't remember what the source was, but he basically said all of Crytek's games are going to be free-to-play from now on.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yep.
This is one of the biggest studios in the world, one of the most respected studios in the world. They know what they're doing. Yeah. They know what their business is.
And they're known for making, like, the highest possible quality games.
Right?
Like, their engines are just insane.
So that tells us two things. One, that they believe this model works for them. And two, that, you know, that their real push is yet to come.
Yep.
So, and people are going to, they're leaders and people are going to follow them.
And sort of on the back of free to play, I'm seeing a lot more browser based stuff that looks really good. And, you know, I mean, it sort of helped get into that space with Quake Live. And now we're seeing, we were talking about Game Globe, which is like this game creation thing free to play.
Oh my God, so amazing.
That runs in your browser and you can make a little like level, tweet the link, and then without signing up, everyone can be playing it in their browser without a
That's really
thing
cool.
With a plugin. So, we're going to see so much more browser-based stuff that looks like everything else out there that you run from a client.
I actually used Gaikai for the first time this week because Terra released a demo.
Yes.
Where
was really slick.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe that was
possible.
You
click one button, and you're playing Terra in the browser. It took probably 30 seconds to load, and that was it. But, I mean, the reaction time or the delay time was almost not noticeable. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, it used to be that one of the huge reasons why these console platforms were so important to publishers and developers was piracy. You know, the PC is more powerful, it's more flexible, it's got all these advantages, but there is that, right? And now the problem, the unsolvable problem, it was unthinkable that you'd ever find a solution, you know, to this 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, right? And just like that, solved. It's done.
Give them the game.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. I mean,
how do we make money? Charge nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, you know? Because before it was like, you know, there was just a sense of resignation. Like, well, look, it's just, it's digital. You're never going to be able to fight this. Yeah. So just deal with it, right? And then all of a sudden, it's not a sense of resignation anymore. It's deal with it. This is awesome. Yeah. We're making tons of money. We're selling hats.
and my biggest argument for free-to-play to the people who are still skeptical about it is you get to play more games. Like, that's my favorite part of this whole trend towards free-to-play. Yep. I get to play more games as someone that's on a limited budget, and that's only a good thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that the old model still definitely has a place. Like, free-to-play, we talk about, it's usually multiplayer. And I was actually talking to the guys at Larian, and making Divinity Original Sin, and they were sort of saying, like, I feel like a game should have a beginning, middle, and end. I think you should just get everything in the package. And there's still a place for that. And piracy may still be an issue, but we'll see what happens.
Although, you know, it is interesting. I've noticed that, I mean, I'm a grown-up, right? I don't respond to, my favorite rock bands like I did when I was maybe in my teens or 20s. But I've noticed that a lot of the people I listen to today, their business models... They don't care if you're pirating their music, and they post it themselves. They have fans trade all their live shows on their own forums. And what's happening is I'm buying different things from them now. Mm-hmm. I'm buying, like, Kristen Hirsch's book that had a CD inside it. No, she didn't even have a CD inside it. She put a code that anybody could, of course, copy out of the bookstore, right? And that's where you could download the songs that were associated with that book. But I'm buying physical products again from... And they're using the music as promotion. Now, that's just one thing, obviously, out of many things you can do. But I just noticed without even being aware of it, I transitioned over into giving them my money in different ways and probably spending more money that way to do it. Yeah. She'll even, for $5,000, you can be in her studio and watch her record.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, you know?
Well, they get more money that way, and the studio doesn't get as big a cut.
Right.
So, yeah.
Awesome. SimCity looks amazing.
Like,
I read Tyler's cover story a few months back, and I was really excited about it, but I kind of forgot about it. And then they started showing all the footage and all the stuff happening in the city. Like, this is going to be amazing.
I'm going to say false.
What?
I'm going to take a literal response. Wow. Okay, and I was praising this game after saying it, but I'm going to take a literal response to this question. I'm going to take it literally and say it does not look amazing. first thing that entered my mind in the demo, 15-minute demo at E3, that grass is really jagged.
Yeah.
That's generally what I was saying. Like, wow, like the grass is like not
pretty.
It could
use some anti-aliasing. There's a lot of artifacting. But.
Yes.
The art direction, I'm just going to jump into.
No, please do.
I'll agree with you. The art direction looks great. Mm-hmm. Like the buildings are all so readable and just they've pared them down to like their core function. And it's just here's a house. You can tell what kind of house it is, how expensive it might be, who might live there. You know, and there's sort of a shack, and it's like, but they're all really readable, and they're adorable too. Like they're just charming looking.
What I liked was this showed an industrial area, and you know, they're saying how the mayor was not really paying attention to crime, and there happened to be graffiti. Graffiti is an indicator of crime in this area. There's graffiti just dynamically spread across these buildings.
Yeah, that is something they told me. Like kids will go around spraying graffiti, and everything has an agent that does it. You know, there's nothing that's just like statistically your crime rates.
Oh, you're using their language, agent.
Yeah, I mean that's I couldn't think of a better way.
No, to refer
to them because they are because they're people, but they're also cars and like electricity and water. So yeah, so I mean that's really cool. If you don't have enough schools, the kids will just go hang out in parks and they'll get together and crime will go up.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what happens when kids hang out together.
Oh,
in parks.
They're over there loitering.
It's very simplified social mechanics in order to make it a playable game.
Yeah,
It seems to be evolving in all the right places. Mm-hmm. Like it's not messing with what makes SimCity cool, like the zoning areas and stuff, but it's just changing the way the simulation works. And watching like buildings light up as power comes back on, just that looked satisfying.
It was charming. I think my big positive takeaway was, I mean, there's this big concern with the always online DRM.
Yeah.
When, you know, I should be able to just build a city on my own hard drive, not have to sync it up with the cloud and all these crazy social features. But I was totally sold on the multiplayer collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, the demo they showed was three cities working together, and they happened to be working towards this great work, which is an international airport sort of shown in the center. And to me, that is simply cooperatively building a wonder in civilization, essentially. It's the same sort of thing. You're one city's, like, giving you alloys, one city's giving workers, one city's doing this, and I immediately was like, I want to build a city with you guys.
Yeah.
Build, work on something, you know, build a space shuttle or something, which is actually, you know, that's another wonder in Civ.
Right.
And that's like our weekend project, and we get it done, and that's satisfying. You know, you pitch in this, I pitch in that. That sounds totally cool to me. Yeah. Like something to work, a goal to work toward.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And that's not a mechanic that was really present in multiplayer, in any SimCity game I can
We're
think of.
We're going to the moon.
Can't wait.
And then you have the sort of global leaderboards and stuff. So, if we're industry moguls and we decide we want to create three cities and work toward being the biggest car manufacturer in the SimCity world, we could do that and have that goal and get resources and build factories and actually have to ship out cars to SimCity world and sell them on the market.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I was just very surprised. I was like instantly like, okay, I want that more than single player isolation gameplay. I'm totally sold on that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind having the option for single player isolation gameplay, but that's not the way things are going. In a lot of cases, like with Diablo.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to try and keep these conversations a little shorter because we got a long list to go through still. PlanetSide 2 will change shooters forever.
You just said shorter and then said that to
everyone. I know. Yeah. I'm sorry. Whoa, sorry. Right. We'll make it shorter after this one. How about that?
Okay. True, and for two reasons. It's going to set a new standard, not just for free-to-play, like visual fidelity, but it is going to be the new visual standard for shooters on PC. Absolutely. You know,
really?
Engine that they've been building for 5 years. For multiplayer. Okay. I'll stipulate that. Looks better than Battlefield 3, in my opinion. Tyler, you can agree or disagree.
Well, it's a different sort of art direction. I think it does look amazing, though. And, I would say maybe it looks better.
There's a lot of clarity, I think, in the lighting, in the view distance and things like that. Second reason I'm going to say, this is actually something that didn't really get played up a lot, but it was shown alongside PlanetSide 2 on the floor. So they're building an iOS app and an Android app. Okay, hang with me. I have no interest in these things usually. I don't own an iPad. I don't own an iPhone. But what you're going to be able to do with it is join voice chat for your faction without being in-game.
That's awesome.
So listening in on your drive home, at work, the war is still happening, and you're listening, and you can actually talk. You can actually contribute.
Yeah.
That's completely innovative. That's game-changing type stuff. In addition to that, there's going to be, in the iPad app they're showing, and this is actually going to be available on the web as well. Yeah. All of these features, I believe, are going to be available through the web version. There's a dynamic map of like the continents and things like that, so you can see territory control in real time, how it's changing, what resources are changing hands, again, like from your PC and stuff. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, that's an incredible. If you can receive some sort of alert on your phone, like your outpost is being taken or something. Like imagine you're just at the office, you get an alert like your outpost is being taken. Holy crap, hold on. You jump outside, get on the phone, like, all right, what's going on? All right, and you're the commander. So you're like, all right, I want team two, you know, going out there, team one doing that. Like, oh my gosh. I see EVE Online players doing this, but they have to, like, call each other on the phone, and it's like, you don't want to give your phone number only to people you trust. Like, having it built in like that is amazing.
This is such a middle finger to Call of Duty Elite and Battlefield Premium, honestly, where... Yeah. They're generating these similar kinds of services, stat tracking, like, you know, how am I doing over time with certain weapons? How are my friends doing over time? You know, clan things and, like, built-in wikis for weapons and all that stuff. It's free.
Yeah.
It's free and, like, you know, it's open source, so you can, like, build your own clan website and integrate all this stuff into there. Wow. Yeah.
That's fantastic to hear. Yeah, I didn't hear about that at all. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing you being like on your phone, like, we need to get some air support on that supply line, and then like your boss walks up and says, oh yeah, we'll touch base with you on that later, and sounds like a plan. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So we're seeing a new trend in game design, a new trend start in game design, away from large scale narrative content and more towards building interesting systems that lets players build the story themselves. For example, PlanetSide 2, which essentially has no story. They're just building the world. SimCity. Neverwinter, having the Foundry, where you create your own content.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what was the... How was this... I'm sorry.
So we're seeing the start of a new game design trend.
So the question is...
Is game design moving away from... developers building large narrative content, mm-hmm. and instead building the systems and tools to let you build it.
Something that the Dishonored designers talked about when I went and saw it a while ago. They were like, and this may relate to sort of how your experience was with it, Logan. They said like, yeah, the game's got a story. Story is really important, but we want player created stories to happen. We want player freedom to generate your own story with how you do it, and that. The buzzword is emergent gameplay, but I think, we're seeing, I think we are.
I mean, I think all stories are player-created stories. The way I experience the story in Max Payne 3 is no doubt different from the way Tyler experiences it. But, of course, it's still a directed, you know, experience.
Yeah, we're both seeing the same
cutscenes. We all interpret things the different ways, and this just takes that... The next step, which is that we can collaborate now on making more of this game than it was intended to be, and hopefully the developer has got the sort of flexibility to build that into the game and promote it, because that's what keeps games alive is when communities coalesce around them.
So do you think something like Watch Dogs that we kind of talked about has all those systems and stuff? Could Watch Dogs get away with building a game that doesn't really have a narrative story, but instead just kind of puts you in this world where you can change, play with all these systems and just see what happens?
No.
No? It has to have kind of a narrative story kind of driving you through?
I think so.
But what a bit, would you have said the same thing about Minecraft, though?
I mean, Minecraft with building as just the central mechanic? No.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I think, I mean, the difference with Watch Dogs is that they've set up a fiction for this world, and it's like, I want to see something realized in that fiction.
Right.
Maybe that's the primer. It's like, that's the spark. Here's it. We'll get you started.
Yeah, because what if it was just like, there's not a main narrative, but when you go into that party that they showed at the demo, like, when you walk in there, it just tells you, like, oh, you see all these people, And it kind of tells you, okay, this person is, you know, wanted for whatever. And then you can kind of decide, oh, maybe I'll try and take him down. And then you get everything that you have.
I think
there.
A game like that could be successful where you I don't think that's watched. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it could, yeah. I mean, Skyrim in the same way, if you don't bother with the main quest, you just kind of decide what you want to do.
Skyrim's kind of a hybrid of the two, though, of like, you know, it's partly immersion and partly these compartmentalized stories that are set up for you.
I mean, there is a narrative to those stories.
What if they let players create other missions in Watch Dogs? Like, you know, you find somebody and they can say, look, I want you to get this for me,
man.
And I'll give you this. And they give you the tools to set up things and like, well, you have to break into this house and grab this object and then we hack into this thing. And
I want some MMO or some game to bring back player bounties from Star Wars Galaxies.
Well,
there's such an awesome system.
There's an amazing add-on for World of Warcraft that people used probably around Burning Crusade where you could do that. You had to have it installed, but once you did, you could create quests, and anyone else that had the add-on could see that you had a quest and go up to you, and it'd be like, if you collect these things for me, you know, I'll pay you this amount of money or give you this stuff. And the transactions were automated and stuff. It was a really cool system.
Cyberpunk might be a good theme for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh,
totally.
Right.
All right. Moving on. Once World of Tanks, World of Battleships, and World of Warplanes are all online, it will provide the best yet arena for large-scale military campaigns in an online game. Because if you guys didn't hear, the news is all of these games will be in the same world and the outcomes in each will affect each other. Your clans will go across both. Your characters, your XP will go across all the games. So there will be clans in all three games, you know. All right, first you have to take the naval, and that will give you an advantage in the land battle, and then the airships will give you airstrikes.
I don't want to be cynical, but I really see this as more of a play. So I'm going to bring up Zynga here and the way that they sort of take their existing communities for Farmville and say, hey, come to Frontierville. Hey, come to Cityville. I mean, they want to utilize their assets. They have a big community in World of Tanks. Mm-hmm. They want to transfer them and give them incentives. And it's admittedly a cool creative idea to propagate through other brands and keep playing within their own family of games. I see it more as that, honestly, than as like a really cool idea.
Only difference I would see is that in Zynga, all those games are separate. They're just trying to get you to play multiple ones.
Right.
Whereas these, they do affect each other.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Razer is building a huge joystick, keypad, touchscreen combination peripheral for MechWarrior Online.
Jeez Louise.
Will it be worth the insane amounts of money it's likely to cause? And what do you want the touchscreen to do? Like, what would you use it for?
Make a sandwich. Just hit a button and a sandwich pops out of your CD drive. That would be pretty awesome.
We have no idea what they're going to charge for this. Oh, my goodness. Like,
right.
It's going to be insane.
It's still very prototype. I mean, Razer sort of has a reputation with the Blade also, like announcing things very early, not giving a lot of details. I really hope they like release a version without the screen. I don't feel the need for like another screen that's only going to be used presumably for one game. No word if it'll be, you know, cross-compatible, if you'll be able to like edit a DLL file to make it usable with Hawken or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But
And MechWarrior is kind of more like, you know, like gritty mechanical, like pulling levers and kind of stuff. Like, I don't really see like a sleek touchscreen as kind of fitting the aesthetic of previous MechWarrior games necessarily. So, I
like the idea of having damage information housed there.
That's true.
That's fine. I feel like that is important enough. And honestly, like, I got to play MechWarrior Online at the show floor. I found myself like not really inspecting the enemy damage information that much. It was kind of like just flashing a lot and not really giving me specific information about like, has he actually lost that arm or is it just critically damaged? I'm not sure. That'll be handy, but again, like, I just want the physical interface, force feedback. I want a joystick is the only thing that matters. And, like, a throttle is nice, but beyond that.
Well, but what might have been neat instead of a screen would be like programmable like LED bars, like a bar for health that goes up.
Sure.
And much cheaper, obviously, than a touch screen, and maybe you can set it to different stats.
I mean, I'm still a little surprised this is happening. I mean, it's a free-to-play game, and they're going to be releasing, they should be releasing, unless it turns out to be Vapor hardware, what has to be a like $500? Do we like
five to six?
At least, because it looks like the size of an iPad.
It's a tablet like size screen. Yeah, right. They had a physical one on the show floor. Again, it's a prototype, but the thing is huge. I mean, the joystick alone is probably $120 bucks if they were selling that standalone. Yeah.
What would be smart is if they let you just put your existing tablet in there and just sold the rest separately for cheaper. But yeah. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, it's Razer. They've got big goals.
They do. All right. Next up, Lucius is a 6-year-old baby who brutally murders everyone.
That's just fantastic. Yeah. I mean,
I knew you'd be pro that.
Wow.
Now, do you think that this 6-year-old that murders people is the traumatized 2-year-old from Among the Sleep that grew up 4 years and turned evil? Well,
this is almost a trend now, right? Like,
yeah.
I actually don't think so, because I got direct data on this kid, and his soul belongs to the devil, and he is the spawn of the devil. So I don't think that was the case for the 2-year-old.
Not that
right,
we know.
Right,
of.
Right, right. Because, and it was the, I got the press release when I got the demo, and it says it will emerge directly from hell and to online stores on October 26th. So I'm not sure that there's, right.
Yeah, Lucius Lucifer, that's probably an intentional. Yeah.
The setup is like this, you know, this kid was born on June 6th. 1966. And
of course.
Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Any 6 years old, is that right?
Emerge directly from hell, I think, just means that people are going to go to GameStop at midnight.
No.
Oh!
And what are this kid's targets again, you were telling me?
Well, yeah, and so his, you have to, like, you want, your job is to collect as many souls as possible for dad as you can.
So just be clear, you're playing as the evil kid. This is not your antagonist.
You are definitely playing as the evil kid. And your targets are, and I'm quote. Let me quote from the press release here. But to bring Satan as many souls as possible, including those of all his family members and the service staff.
What? What did they do?
Like the poor butler who's been serving that family
right?
for generations.
Yeah. Now he's serving staff. Him.
Yeah.
Right.
Man.
So, and please don't forget to pick up the souls of the service staff, the way home. I'll be very disappointed. Yeah, but you have to engineer all these traps and horrific fates for all the members of your family and the service staff.
Yes. Wait, so is it Satan's family or your family?
It's your family. So you were born into this family, but really, you're the devil's son, as indicated by your birthday. And when you become 6 years old, you see the pattern here. Devil says, oh, by the way, I'm your dad. I would like you to come home. But on the way, can you pick up a bunch of souls for me? it has, you know, your family and all the service staff.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the idea is you have to engineer all their deaths. And you have some powers. You know, you can move things around. You can, you know. Who knows? I haven't got a hands-on demo yet, but we will be getting one exclusively very, very soon. And I can't wait to, you know, push people downstairs, you know, that vat of boiling chicken stock on the, you know, kitchen stove and stuff like that.
I hope at the end you go to hell and your family and the service staff are all there. Like, what the hell?
Right, right, right.
What? You gave my soul to the devil?
WTF.
I raised you.
Right, yeah. Right. And then plus you get, you know, there will be times when it may be the first game, which I enjoy not doing anything, because you just stand there with that little blank stare as they scream, you know, and they're trying to, I saw this one guy with his head on fire, right? And he's trying to put out the fire on his head. And I would just like to just not take my hands off the mouse and keyboard and just stare, or maybe press S to stare.
Yeah.
You know, so you just hold down the S button and your eyes go really wide.
Yeah. And you stop blinking.
Yes, so the eyes exactly. Exactly. Pause blinking, S, and then you just impassively watch as this person,
is collected. Press B to take creepy, shallow breaths in their ear.
Nice.
That's good, Tyler. As a premise, there's actually a game I'm reminded of for Sega Genesis. There's a game called The Haunting. Anybody?
No.
Bueller? No? Okay, so sort of isometric game. You sort of ran around this mansion. There are actually various houses, and you just possess objects trying to scare the family as much as possible, scare them out of the home. Mm. So, you know, like it was presumed that like their family killed you or something. You wanted them to move out.
Teach them.
Yeah, so you move
pack your stuff.
But it's the same sort of thing. Like you're
gonna have to carry a lot of boxes onto a truck.
I mean, it was kind of a game of just watching a bunch of funny animations. Like you'd hop into a picture, you know, a portrait on the wall, and then like you know they'd walk by and you hit a button and like the eyes would go all crazy or something. You'd haunt the stove and make it.
That sounds like a way more interesting version of The Sims, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, moving on. Dawnguard Skyrim DLC adds Vampire Lord, werewolf skills, crossbows, and castles. How does that make you feel?
Crossbows buy-in.
I am just too excited about that. I mean, I'm already like the world's biggest Skyrim fan, but like I'm also a huge werewolf fan, and I thought the one problem with werewolves in Skyrim is like, okay, it's cool to run around and maul people and like chew their throats out, but you're not skilling up any of your weapon skills or any of your magic skills or armor or anything while you're in werewolf form. So it's kind of like this god mode that you don't level up at all while you're using it. And now that they're adding like a werewolf perk tree so that you actually can progress while in werewolf form, that's pretty awesome.
When I was your age, I would have been slavishly grateful for the ability to chew people's throats out. They're impossible to please these days.
My generation, we're so entitled. You know?
My gosh. Yeah.
So in the DLC, you kind of have to pick between siding with the Vampire Lords or with the Dawn Guard, which is like a vampire hunting faction. Quick roundtable. Don't need an explanation. Who are you siding with?
Dude, you're telling me I can't go all Van Helsing on this and just kill everybody? That's supernatural?
Yeah, of course you can.
That's
sorry.
Me.
All right.
Siding with the Dawn Guard, obviously. My werewolf is going to be ripping some vampires.
All right, so Dawn Guard get crossbows, which is sweet. But Vampire Lords get vampire skills.
I think I'm going to go vampire. I think that I turned into a vampire accidentally in Skyrim and found out hours later that I was, you know, becoming pale.
That's the best way, though.
Yeah, so I want to role play a continuation of that story in which I'll chill with the vampires. Yeah.
Logan?
Vampire.
Yeah,
nice.
These guys are going to get all
werewolf.
Blade on us, and it's...
the
werewolves just don't seem to be in control,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're just sort of spazzy and...
drink a lot of Mountain Dew.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. And vampires, they dress better,
they dress really nicely.
They can jump.
Yeah.
You know?
And they've got a plan.
They can jump.
It's one of their special skills.
Yeah. I'm just saying that they just...
Werewolves chew out necks, but, you know, vampires are more delicate about it. They just put two nice little marks.
Yeah, yeah. Them. You're like, you're those, like, pretty boys that walk around like, oh, I don't want to kill you. I just want to drink your blood and then maybe spoon a little bit.
Well, this isn't Twilight, buddy.
Chill out.
That's true. The vampire lord form does look pretty badass.
I'm taking my werewolf character. I'm going to try and become a vampire on top of it.
You actually can't. Werewolf makes you immune to all.
I'm going to find a way. So that's what I'm doing.
A vampire werewolf.
Yeah,
it's going to be a blue thing from Underworld.
It's going to be like a flying werewolf, just like a shaggy bear flying at you through the skies.
Shaggy bear flying at you.
But you'll just be so deformed that it'll actually make you less effective. Like, you'll be like asymmetrical and like flopping to one side.
That's cool.
Officer, I know how this is going to sound, but there was a shaggy bear flying at me.
But then, TJ, then I can be a werewolf that jumps.
Oh, yeah. You'll get that jump ability that only vampires have. Yeah.
If there are any Skyrim modders out there, Josh would really, really appreciate the werewolf vampire.
The opportunity to become an abomination.
Yes. All right. Did E3 make you more or less excited about The Elder Scrolls Online?
Less.
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 Less?
Less.
All right. I kind of got a little excited by the trailer. I kind of like the different races. I'm excited that I can be the lizard people and live in a poisonous swamp. Argonian. My apologies,
yeah.
DJ.
Yeah, my lore senses were eating there.
I think people are being too harsh on it. I've seen a lot of really negative stuff like, oh, it's just doing everything MMOs are doing, everything. While that is all entirely true, and I'm still not very excited about this game, like, people are actually hating this game, and I don't think it's that. I think it's just going to be kind of bland.
That's weird. You know, that's an overreaction, which has its grounding somewhere else. I don't know where, but it's not in the game.
Yeah.
I think where some of that is coming from is that the potential and the ambition people want to see in this game is maybe not being met, and they're like, I love Skyrim, I love the Elder Scrolls in general, and you're not doing what, you know, something I feel lives up to it, and maybe that's where it's coming from. But the actual, like, rage is, of course, just a thing that happens on the internet.
Yeah. I was slightly more excited afterwards. I'm still not super excited, but I'm anxious to see more. I'm really hoping they have something up their sleeve, like, you know, remember how we said it's all the same or whatever? Like, oh, but there's this. And like, oh, that's really cool. That's going to be... I'm really hoping they have that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Minor Wars 2081 looks like a cross between Descent and EVE Online. It has space combat with interior environments inside asteroids. It will come in a multiplayer version and an MMO. So the multiplayer is co-op and competitive, or you can play it all solo. And you can either like pursue war, or you can build empires, you can mine. The big thing, everything in the game is entirely destructible, including asteroids. You can like mine your way through them to get inside.
Can I
like,
blow up the sun?
You can probably you... can. You need a very large nuke.
Can you jump?
Now, I was pretty excited about this. The graphics look kind of hit or miss, and we still don't know if they're going to live up to these promises that they've said. But I'm really excited about this. This was the surprise of E3 for me that I'm looking forward to kind of hearing more about.
Cool.
I admittedly, the first time I heard the words Minor Wars, I thought it was like a knockoff of Hunger Games.
Just a bunch of old prospectors hitting each other with
pickaxes. I thought it was like miners, like young people.
Oh, you
know,
gotcha.
And they were like going after each other, you know. But no, that's not it at all.
There will be a Dead Island 2.
Yes.
Okay.
Does that excite anybody?
Oh, what was it confirmed? I'm sorry. Did I miss that?
Yeah.
Oh. Only if they sort of release a game that works. I mean, I hate to be that critical, but like, it was really buggy at launch. Yeah. I hope they've learned from that and take, you know, sure.
I never got excited about the Dead Island franchise, and I'm a big zombie fan, but it just didn't seem like the kind of gameplay I want in a zombie game. So
yeah,
I think there were ideas in there I'd like to see expanded on. It got a little dull for me, walking around crafting weapons and driving to a thing. And the missions were a little confusing sometimes, but there's good ideas in there. So
cool.
Dead Archipelago. Okay, the next one.
Somewhere, former intern Greg Henniger is crying as he hears us bash Dead Island.
Oh, yeah.
He unreasonably loved that game.
It's not a bad game, I don't think, except for the bugs. It just wasn't really my cup of tea. Cup of bloody tea.
Magic the Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalkers 2013 is releasing on Steam in less than 2 weeks. It's coming on June 20th. They just announced it. New mode, new effects, more challenges. Are you guys going to pick it up?
Sort of diminishing returns for me. I feel like I'm going to play... So this is going to be the third edition hitting Steam. I'm going to play this one less than the previous one, which I played less than the first one. You know, just naturally.
Yeah.
But I'll give it a look.
All right. I'm probably going to... I'll pick it up. This is one of these games that, like, I'll pick it up if my friends pick it up. But if they're still playing 2012 or whatever, I'll just stick with the old one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Neverwinter's Combat, Evan. It reminded you of Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, I got to play Neverwinter. Free-to-play. First free-to-play iteration of that brand franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Classic PC game. Remind me a little bit of that. I mean, it is more MMO-like. I wrote that in my preview, and I sort of got some negative response. I don't know if I necessarily intended that. It's not as, like, over the top as Dragon Age 2, but sort of in the sense that it falls somewhere between the pace of like pausable combat. It's not pausable, and an action game, I guess, and an MMO. It's sort of all those things thrown together into a pot.
Yeah,
it was fine.
Where it's not as actiony as something like Terra or something.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Yeah, like I mean, good example on Shift. That's sort of like your blocking ability. I was mentioning the developer, like, okay, so when I hold block, I bring up my shield. I instinctively walk away from an enemy, but I turn my back to that enemy. So when I get hit in the back, even though I'm still holding shield to block, I still get the defensive bonus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that makes no sense. I'm getting stabbed in the back while holding my shield in front of me. And I associate that more with MMOs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. EA's senior VP of global commerce said that Steam sales are bad for publishers because they lower the value of the IP and they won't be doing them on Origin.
I thought this was a really interesting comment made by EA. So this was an interview to Games Industry. We linked to it on our website. And I don't know. I mean, for the consumer, obviously, we want cheap games. Why wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like I start to think about from a developer's perspective, you look at the Humble Indie Bundle, which is, hey, fantastic, and sold so much. They just added, like, Super Meat Boy and a couple other games to it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we threatening sort of the long-term association of value with indie games or just PC games in general by just having Steam and having publishers slash prices so dramatically, 75%, sometimes even just 2 months after launch? Is that undermining the long-term health of the industry? I don't know.
If we don't like that, then what we're saying is we don't like markets. You know?
Yes.
Because,
right.
I mean, I don't know if the – I'm sure that the EA person isn't as clueless as he sounds, but he sure does sound it. Mm-hmm. Because they – you know, publishers don't set the value of products. Companies don't set the value of products. Customers do. If you price – you know, if I sell you a piece of paper and I price it at $10,000, that doesn't mean that the piece of paper is worth $10,000. It's only worth that if somebody buys it at $10,000.
Yeah.
And what developers are finding, what publishers are finding is that, well, if you sell a game at a certain price for a certain amount of time, you clean up that audience, and then you drop the price, and then you clean up a bigger audience. And if you feel that that's, you know, devaluing your games, well, then leave the price up there, but you're leaving all that money on the table.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't, if it's that much of a concern, like we can't make these games at those prices, then don't make those games at the, you know, bring down the cost. You know, I remember when Hollywood was, you know, they were doing all these congressional hearings and this somebody actually said, well, how do you expect us to keep making $200 million movies, you know? Well, if that's really your concern, then don't spend $200 million if you feel like it's too much of a gamble in the market as it exists today. Don't ask the government to, like, well, can you set up these laws to make sure that we can still, you know, continue to do this thing? And that's why I'm really disturbed by the sort of backlash against from publishers about used games. You know, I get that it cuts into your profits. I get that it, you know, it hurts, you know, but we're in publishing. We get it. You know, yeah. We understand what happens when, you know, your product is devalued. But that's tough. That's the market. And you have to adapt. And if it's, you know, if it's too much of a risk to spend that much money, then, you know, manage your business model.
Yeah, it's the arguments against it is kind of the same arguments that I think are very silly against piracy, where, like, with piracy, they come out and say, you know, oh, the game was pirated 10 million times. That's 10 million lost sales. But the fact is that when you cut these sales and you sell games at cheaper, you're not selling it to people that would have bought it at $60.
Right.
You're selling
right.
it to people that wouldn't have bought the game otherwise.
Right.
And so it's just you're just growing the market and you're giving it to more people. Like my brother, he would never buy these games at $60. He just can't afford that money right now. So, you know, mm-hmm. he'll wait till it comes out, you know, and he'll wait for a good sale and then he'll buy it.
But I think what these guys are and again, I don't agree with the EA's comments here. I think they are a little like old and not really embracing what you're talking about. But I think what he says in there explicitly is it's a precedent now. And now you have this expectation of, oh, I'm not going to buy Skyrim at launch. It's going to be half price in 2 months. I mean, sometimes that is the case for a lot of what we'd call AAA or big budget games.
Yeah. But and
that's great.
Yeah.
That is great for me as a consumer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, and the way I look at that is like, how could that be a bad thing? I mean, I just don't. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
I mean, I feel like if, you know, if that means that we don't get Avatar 2, you know, I liked Avatar. I loved it. I love seeing movies like that. I love huge, big budget Hollywood movies. But if they can't afford to make them, you know, then I'll live.
Yeah. And if that game isn't compelling enough for someone to want to buy it in those first 2 months, like that's not someone that's probably going to buy that game anyways, because sure, games sometimes go on sale for 50%, but it's not a guaranteed thing. Like Skyrim is still just barely, I think it's...
On Steam, it's still $60.
Yeah, it's still $60.
Yeah.
It's dropped down to 30 or 40, I believe.
Think about how many edit passes our writing in PC Gamer goes through, right? How many people look at that piece of paper? And that costs a lot of money, it takes a lot of time, but we feel it results in a much higher quality product. But a lot of people out there in the last 10 years have decided, well, you know what? We get it. But we'd like to spend no money for a product that's almost as good or 50% as good, right? And so the business model changed. We have to adapt. That meant budget cuts. That meant, you know, doing things differently. And we didn't like it. I'd rather, you know, that, you know, people paid oodles of money. But that's just not the way things are anymore today. So we have to adapt and we have to maintain our quality by at the same time keeping costs down and just adapting to a changing market. And, you know, so I don't think that anybody can say we don't get it, because if anybody does, we do. But, you know, this is a good thing. It's working for consumers and it's working for other developers who are taking advantage of that idea. Look at Valve. Yeah. Look at how much money they're making. And they, you know, they develop Portal. They spend all that money on the voicing and you know, just making a really high quality game, and then they keep making free stuff for it. you know, and releasing it because, you know, and they're thinking this increases the value of our product and our brand, and it also increases the confidence people have in our product. You know, you've heard all these arguments before, and look how well it's working for them.
Yeah.
Right.
Awesome.
You know what? Yeah. There's just one other thing. I heard a phrase for the first time this week that I just thought it's just perfect. The phrase was non-paying customer. And I love that because it was spoken by somebody who's in the free-to-play, mm-hmm. you know, in games. And the idea is that even if somebody isn't spending money, you know, on your product, they can still be extremely valuable to you. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, one of the more contentious examples of that is like Facebook, right? You're not, if you're using Facebook, you're not the customer, you're the product being sold, blah, blah, blah. But the idea for us, like for PC Gamer, is if you're a part of our community, if you're on our website and you're contributing to conversations, you're valuable.
Yeah.
You know?
And if it's in like an MMO or in PlanetSide 2, you're fighting alongside someone who's paying who wouldn't be having as much fun if
exactly.
you weren't there with them.
That's yeah. the non-paying customer, and that's a huge value. And I was so thrilled to hear a developer, you know, come out and just sort of condense it into three perfect words that express that.
Yeah.
So there you
awesome.
Go.
Tomb Raider's first trailer came out, made pretty much everyone uncomfortable mm-hmm. across the board. Does the new gameplay footage that was shown at E3 reassure you of the game's potential?
Nope.
I don't know. In talking to people, a lot of people were like, "Oh, what did you think was wrong with it? Why don't you like this new Tomb Raider?" And it's not that I like hate it or anything. It just like it just feels weird to me to see little Laura just get bashed around all the time. I don't know. I mean, I understand it's her origin, and this is where she learns her legacy as a Croft and like becomes the super powerful, cool Tomb Raider. But I don't know. It's weird.
The same way. I don't hate it. There's nothing I hate about it. In fact, there's so much about it that was really cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just feel like it just doesn't look pleasant to me. And yeah, like Tyler said, I get that it's an origin story, and I get that it's going dark, you know? But I just remember playing, you know, Tomb Raider and just the awe, you know, at 640 by 480, 320 by 200, you know, and the caverns of Vilcabamba, you know, and just, whoa, discovering things. And here, yeah, she's just getting the crap beat out of her every few minutes and press X to play. And
I don't want Laura to go dark, I guess, is my problem with it, which is just a personal thing. So it might be a great game. Kind of like when they did Bomberman Act Zero and made like Bomberman this like cyberpunk guy who was like, and I was like, no, he's a cute little round guy who's colorful.
But I mean, also the QuickTime events just were really getting on my nerves, you know. Mm. And now I've seen something similar work. I played the Uncharted series on the PlayStation, and whoa. those are fantastic games, and they are a series of QuickTime events, and they're fun. You know, I mean, they're not just that, of course, but then, you know, all so much is about the characters and the interaction that Naughty Dog brought to the game. And I didn't pick up on any of that in the Tomb Raider game. It could be there. And I'm certainly looking forward to trying it out. But it just left me a little worse than cold.
Mm. Yeah. All right. And then the other one that was kind of weird, Far Cry 3.
it's perfect, kind of weird.
So Far Cry 3 has a central protagonist, which is different than kind of the earlier ones. His name is Voss.
And you mean antagonist?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, central antagonist.
He's a bad
yes.
guy.
Yeah, he's the bad guy, and it seems
he's
to be
crazy.
Kind of a more kind of maybe linear experience. The game seems to be going for a much more kind of mature angle with crazy amounts of swearing. Naked women, psychotic episodes with like hallucinations and sex. What did you guys think?
I think it's very. I'm basing this more on the various demos I've seen in Canada and in Sweden for multiplayer. Mm-hmm. I think it's a much more kind of BioShock approach to the game. Honestly, that's you know they had this sequence where you meet this mad scientist on an island. Not mad scientist. I don't know. He's like a doctor character, and you need to go find a hallucinogenic mushroom for him in this like cove, and you wander down there and you basically like stumble into some spores and inhale them, and you have this hallucination, and like it's very Alice in Wonderland. The level design is changing colors and shifting around you, and you're like you're looking at your hands all in a very cliched way in front in first person in front of you. It's a nice approach. I don't know. It feels like it's just a very high production value game, and I'm gonna play it and enjoy it.
My sense was that I'm gonna love playing it, and plus the crossbow. I mean, it was fantastic, and I liked a lot of. I liked stealth isn't usually my first option. I actually really enjoyed it in Far Cry 3. The woman squirming on top of you, and all the tribal tattoos, and the hallucinogenic stuff, whatever. You know, just like it just seems to. I don't know who they're trying to appeal to because, you know, I know a huge, very broad swath of gamers and. Just not many of them just think that's just the coolest atmosphere. Yeah. But who knows? I mean, I don't know everybody in the world. I wouldn't have cared for it myself. I mean, I wouldn't have called that shot. But it wasn't – I didn't think it was offensive or anything like that. It was just there.
I mean, it's rare that I can, like, buy into marketing for something. But they're playing up – Insanity is, like, their main angle for this whole game.
Very much so. Absolutely.
I think the special edition is called the Insanity Edition or something. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Tyler? Do you remember that?
Maybe. Sounds about right.
But meaning the dialogue, and they actually brought in the voice actor to talk to us, really nice guy. He was also doing mocap, of course. That's sort of the professional standard these days for the character. And all the dialogue between all these sort of crazy, either mind characters felt very like Sandra Cohen, for example, felt very like Andrew Ryan. And I like that dialogue. I mean, it felt serious and dramatic, and you got a sense of these are very dangerous people. They have a strange history, and you're caught up in that. It remains to be seen if they'll pull it off, but it's a nice approach. It's a better approach than, like, hey, Russian guy taking over the world again.
Yeah.
Genocide. So
like Fear and Loathing in Far Cry.
Yeah.
And I suspect we're in for one of those sort of narrative twisty roller coasters. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because in the demo, I mean, you and this Voss guy, like, your models keep changing and stuff, and he's saying that you are him and he's you and stuff. So. I have to say, like, the gameplay wise, it kind of bummed me out a little bit. Like, I have to admit, this demo is the only thing I've seen of Far Cry 3. I haven't seen anything else. And it just seemed extremely linear. Like, hit X a bunch. He was using an Xbox controller. Hit X a bunch to execute a knife stab, and it gives you, like, a cinematic. The only real interesting gameplay I saw was he shot open cages, and the lions or tigers would kind of leap out and attack them. But other than that, there were no choices to make. You basically just go down the corridor killing people.
That was my impression from the demos we got, which is nice. There were, even then in those demos, there were moments that were obviously that was your only option. You know, so there is that.
Cool. I hope it's just a matter. And the demo, you know, he was on stage. They were probably trying to rush through it because they had a limited amount of time.
That actor's voice, though, I think he's a really good actor, number one. I saw him in a movie. That was just gruesome, and I don't recommend it if you've got. So it was called Territories, I think, and it was about a group of people who cross the Canadian border, and unfortunately, they're stopped by fake customs agents, really just like ex-soldiers who are crazy and can't get over the crazy. And he was riveting in that thing. So yeah, so he's going to torment me someday.
All right, last one before we jump through playlists real fast because this is running long. Star Wars 1313 will be the closest to Dark Forces of any Star Wars game so far, and it can be just as good.
Good comparison.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. And maybe even a little bit. They're downplaying the Jedi side of things. So yeah. It's not going to be like Jedi Knight. But yeah, I'll play that kind of game again, sure. Yeah.
Although there has been a conspiracy theory floating around based on how much the main bounty hunter character looks like Mark Hamill's son. If you search it, you can do like a side by side of their faces. So there's a conspiracy theory that there's some tie in to the Skywalker family with the main character in this game.
Interesting. I hope not, because I really like that they've been emphasizing that Jedi will play a very light role in this. That this is all about people living in kind of the seedy underworld of this situation and just like working for crime lords.
What I'd like to see is like a cool guy that maybe like a bounty hunter that finds out he's force sensitive but doesn't become a Jedi. Like he's just like shooting people and throwing rocks.
All right.
That would be an interesting twist on the gameplay.
All right. So One quick sale I wanted to mention, Lord of the Rings Online just hit Steam, better late than never. But they're having a really good sale for $15 that gets you a ton of starter content and $15 worth of cash-op currency. So if you're interested in picking up LOTRO, and they just announced Riders of Rohan at E3, that is a good place to pick it up. Let's go through playlists real fast. Tyler.
I am still getting through Max Payne 3 on hard. It's pretty hard. Whenever I say that on Twitter, someone tweets at me, it's not even that hard, man. But, you know, that's what happens. I had a really hard time last night with one part where, and this is sort of, I really like the game so far, but one criticism of its level design is there was a part, no spoilers, where it was kind of timed. I had to get through a bunch of guys. It was a particularly difficult part near the end, and then this enemy comes out onto the roof above me, and he's one I've seen before. He's padded, he's got a helmet on, so you can't take him out with one headshot. And the last time I saw one of these guys, it was a pretty long battle where I had to wait for him to reload, come back up, shoot him. Turns out this time he was really just a cutscene trigger, and I needed to just get his helmet off to trigger the cutscene. I just needed to shoot his helmet with a sniper rifle or a powerful enough gun. But every time his little entrance cutscene happened, I'd be like, out in the open, I'd be like, I need to get into cover to set up for this long battle. And then the timer would run out because I would be setting up. So I did it like 25 times before I was like, no, I just need to shoot dodge and shoot his helmet off. And then Max stands up, cutscene happens. So like some of the level design is bothering me where it's like hard because I don't get what I'm supposed to do. Other times it's hard because it's just you have to be really tactical. And I'm like, this is really fun. Overall, I'm enjoying it, but...
But you get the sense that they knew better from the whole game, which
exactly.
was pretty,
That's
you know.
Like, what are you having? How much have you played, Logan?
Probably about 2/3 of the way through right now.
Are you getting the sense that certain parts you're just like, why can't, and then you realize, oh, I just needed to use a different gun or something. Like, I was supposed to pick up this.
And whereas at other times, I'm impressed by how they, you know, how arranged the levels and how obvious and you know, how I just got into the action. And even though it's on rails, almost, you know, it's like I got into that wonderful groove. But then those are hard stops that you're like, urgh.
Yeah, I mean, I think my criticism is I bring it out more just because everything else in the game just goes super smoothly and I'm, like, really happy with it. So it's really obvious when it's like, that was a weird design decision. I don't like that.
But right.
Overall, I'm totally enjoying it. I mean, I'm hating it.
There you go.
Logan, how about you?
Well, actually, I'm going to abuse my playlist time. Yes, this is going to happen by saying something that I also saw at E3, which, okay, other than Hawken, which just kind of blew me away. But we're going to get into that a lot more on the next podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm just very, very delighted that somebody finally figured out how to do wireless headphones the right way. Because, you know, there's so much interference and they're so heavy. It's like having a refrigerator on your head. The Astro A50s, oh, Lord. Oh, my goodness. Yes. And then so like, it's not just like a wireless headset, but like we had four people wirelessly linked up.
Oh,
interesting. Yeah, with these headsets that were lighter than my wired sets at home right now.
Huh. Nice. So did they just use like a wireless network or something? Or is
no, it,
software?
It was through the headsets themselves.
Wow.
Built into the headset.
That's really cool.
So it was amazing.
Here's a curveball, Logan. Those cost $300.
Mm-hmm.
Is that worth it?
Yep.
I mean, $300
If I used it for 2 years, which is what I would anticipate the life cycle of a headphone would be, so that's $150 a year, $10 a month, expensive, definitely. No question about it. But, and I turn headphones over every 2 years just because they're available to me. You know, I'd probably hold on to it for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. How I would calculate it is how much would I spend, you know, amortized over 3 years, and is that worth it to me? And I actually do those calculations when I'm buying stuff, you know? And considering how much time I spend playing games and how much time I have with headphones on because, you know, I like things loud.
Yeah.
I don't want to be aggro because I live in a building that's close by to a lot of people, right? And also a huge part of it, and this is yet to be tested, But from what I heard, I'll buy it for now, is that they work just as well for music and movies, which a lot of great gaming headsets just don't do well. The equalization throws everything. And that drives me crazy because I actually do have three different types of headsets at home for when I practice guitar, for when I play games, and for when I just want to walk around when I'm, you know, listening to YouTube videos or whatever. This one seemed to have it all. $300, you know, I paid $280 for like studio monitor-ish ones for guitar stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm there. But again, these haven't been formally tested. You'll hear more about them later. But oh man, yeah. So there's that.
They do have the same drivers, I guess, as the A40s. If I recall correctly.
I'm not certain. I do know they're also firmware upgradable, though. So oh, nice. I mean, and they operate on 5.8, so it's an uncredited band and use uncompressed audio, which is also a nice thing. So, you know, there you have
nice.
It.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, so I was very glad to. I can't wait to get my hands on. They'll be coming in about a month.
And actually, I should have asked this earlier. Was there anything else I didn't mention that you guys wanted to talk about at E3?
Yeah, I'll use my playlist to talk about that, too. Natural Selection 2 really, really surprised me. I haven't really had a chance. You can play it on Steam right now. They have a pre-order situation where you pay $35 to pre-order. There's a beta on Steam. You can play it right now, naturalselection2.com. But I hadn't really spent a lot of time with the Steam version from the past year. They had an alpha that we played way back when. Looks great. I mean, I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago. Hey, PlanetSide 2 is the only game with a custom engine. I was wrong. this has an engine too, and they've been working on it since 2008.
Wow.
Holy.
The game has been in development since 2006, and you know they started on Source. They dropped that. I just published a quote from them today. They claimed at E3 that they're making the most moddable game ever because they're releasing the source code for free with the game. Like, everything is totally open, all their tools and stuff like
nice.
That.
Wow.
But beyond that, it looks really fun. I mean, it's the Aliens game that it's an actually good Aliens game. I'm going to go out there.
It was originally an Alien vs. Predator 2 multiplayer mod, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was one of the best first-person multiplayer games ever. And do they still have the Alien Predator license?
Or? Oh, absolutely not.
Okay,
no.
So it's just kind of generic Aliens?
Well, they have they have their own family, and they don't resemble xenomorphs at all. They're actually, like, quadrupedal-type guys.
Okay.
But really impressed with their mechanics. I mean, again, if you know nothing about this, it's an FPS with sort of an RTS attached to the top of it. So you can, like, in your base, it's aliens versus Marines. One player on each team can sort of go into this hub, take control of these building mechanics within the maps. You can build turrets, build like teleportation chambers. There's a creep mechanic, essentially. They call it infestation. There's like dynamic. Okay, so there's like an engineer, TF2 style engineer class for the alien side that can just build these like totally, these sort of like spheres, like these gross alien spheres. They can just attach them to each other, build. These like little dynamic walls, basically, like wherever you want. That was really cool. And they have like their own separate health bar. They have to be destroyed. And it also just looks good. I mean, that's the other benefit of the custom engine, I guess. So I was really impressed with that. I'm going to be hopping into that this weekend. Yeah.
Awesome.
No.
Did you have anything else that didn't touch on?
No, I don't think. Well, I did really like. I think I mentioned earlier the stuff Larian showed with the Divinity Original Sin. It looks great. I'm not huge into the Divinity series, but I'm like looking at it. I'm like, wow. After playing Diablo 3 and kind of it's good. This looks it's like take Diablo 3, slow it down, make it turn based, make it really tactical. Like have elemental powers that actually do what they are. So your rain spell just makes it rain. And why would you want to use that? Well, you can put out fires. You can make a puddle, freeze the puddle, and it'll freeze someone standing in the puddle. Or you can electrocute a puddle and electrocute someone in the puddle. It's like
oh, man. Puddle electrocution since 2007, BioShock.
but I mean, that is something done commonly. But I like that I can make it rain and create the situation.
Make it rain, Tyler.
Make it rain. And create the situation that wasn't there. And all I did was use a spell that made it rain, which would be useless in most games.
Yeah.
But if I'm on fire, I would like to make it rain. and I just thought that was cool. And there's like environmental tactical stuff going on that seems really fun. And there's a lot of other crazy ideas going on. I think we have a big feature on it coming up.
Yeah.
I believe Rich McCormick saw it probably a lot more than I did. So.
Yes,
awesome.
Sir.
TJ, what have you been playing?
Still doing some Diablo 3. Still in that. Still trying out different builds with a bunch of classes. My barbarian's kind of the point where I'm having to farm the lower difficulty acts to be able to progress in the higher ones, which, you know, is kind of a design part of the game. I also, because of all this Dawnguard stuff, I loaded up Skyrim again last night. I played it, like, constantly from the time it was out to, like, the end of February, and I'd taken, like, a two-month break, and I was back in for, like, 10 minutes. Like, why did I ever stop playing this? This game is so great. So I'll probably be getting back into Skyrim in a significant way.
Awesome.
Yep.
The one thing that was shown at E3 that I didn't actually mention that I want to talk about real fast was Rift. Their Storm Legion expansion. I was not a big Rift player. It's been out for like a year and never really got my attention. But this expansion looks awesome. And so they live streamed some of the content on the show floor. And they showed an open world boss. So this is on one of the new continents. The expansion is adding continents that triple the size of the game. And it's an open world boss that you have to fight. And when you beat him, and it takes like a whole group of people to beat him, he starts going on a rampage around, and this is in the open world where anyone can be, and just starts knocking down walls, and just boom, knocks down a wall, barrels through, and behind that wall is a whole new zone, and now you can go in that zone, and now there's all the sorts of stuff you can do there. Like the developer said, and at the beginning, land was a premium because they had a small continent, they wanted to use everything, but he's like, now I don't have to be worried about kind of blocking off content from players, like... Yeah, I'm going to build an awesome zone. It's going to be over here, but it's not going to be accessible at launch. Like, you're going to have to take down this boss, and he's going to knock down the wall, and then you can, like, rush in behind him and get there. And I just love that idea. Like, they're trying some really cool new stuff.
Wow,
like,
that is very bold.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that sort of stuff happens in dungeons and in instances, but it doesn't really happen in open world stuff in MMOs. So I'm really excited to try that out. The other thing, I've been playing my hardcore monk a lot. I got her up to level 24 now. I'm cruising through Act 2. And actually, one of... I just want to promote this real fast. One of my followers on Twitter was like, oh, dude, that's really cool. You know, I'll give you $50 if you can beat Inferno. Or, sorry, he said, I'll donate $50 to a charity of your choice if you can beat Inferno. And I was like, okay, cool. And so I just kind of mentioned that. And then, like, Matt Miller, one of the lead devs over on City of Heroes, was like, yeah, I'll second that. And then, like, more and more people started getting in, and now there's over $550 donated or like pledged to charity if I can beat certain levels in my hardcore character.
Nice. No pressure.
I know.
No pressure.
So like now it's not even like if I die, I don't lose stuff. Like orphans go hungry.
Yeah.
Now if
people
I don't,
people will starve if your monk
I'm sure
fails.
They can walk barefoot.
Yeah.
A bit of broken glass here, you know, stitches there, no problem.
Do you have like a photo of an orphan, a Polaroid like orphan the mini map, like taped on your monitor?
Nice.
Map?
Yeah.
This is for you, Jesus.
Yeah.
This is
for you, buddy. Yeah, so all the donations are going to the San Francisco Food Bank. It's a really cool organization here. If you want to donate, you can go to bit.ly. It's just the bit.ly link /charitymonk, one word. I'm going to start live streaming it on the weekends. And you can, you know, put money on bosses or anything you want. Tyler actually had an idea I'm not sure I'm going to do yet. But allowing people to bet money that I will die.
That's hedging. So, that's
it seems... Because Tyler was saying, like, it would be really sad when I do die if all this wasted money doesn't go to charity. So I might do something like that. But yeah, so I'll be live streaming that over the next couple weeks and hopefully.
This is Jenny. She
people.
Has scurvy. And this, you can stop it.
This is bold because Monk is pretty much the hardest character to survive on Inferno with.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I had a couple people on Twitter just like, Godspeed, sir. You are doomed.
Yeah.
But I'm trying it.
Josh Augustine, illicit black market Las Vegas monk and martial artist.
What can I say? I'm a man of many talents.
A friend of orphans.
If you have a high level hardcore tank, I think Josh could probably use your help.
That is true. I am not above asking for help. So please, if you have a hardcore high level character, I'm 25 right now on Act 2. I would love to have some sort of barbarian or someone come
if
in and just tank for me.
About being a good person.
Yes.
Yeah. Tank for Josh. Save the children.
I'm Suzanne Summers. For just 75 gold a day, you can help Josh buy a chipped ruby.
Please, think of Jimmy. Shoeless Jimmy.
Don't you want his bracers to deal 4 to 8 more damage per hit? think of the orphans. I'm done.
This is good. I like it. We need like a small YouTube clip or something. All right. So I think that's about enough talking for 1 week. We're going to have a post on the website today. So by the time you have this up, it's going to have all of our staff favorites, personal favorites for E3. On Monday, we're going to have our official E3 awards on the site. So you can look there for all that stuff. We want to hear your voices on our podcast next week as well. You can call us at 877-404-1337, extension 724, or just send an MP3 file to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on the website, pcgamer.com, and you can subscribe to our magazine there. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on the PC Gamer Podcast.
Wait a minute. Can I can I throw in like a deleted scene?
Yeah, of course.
I just want to give a shout out to people in who live in southeastern and east central Iowa. Hi, everybody. I think you're really cool.
Yeah.
Yes. Because that's the 319 area code.
Oh.
So I feel like this is really
devoted
to them. Yeah.
If you reverse that 913, that's where I moved here from.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like a conspiracy.
So, hi, everybody from in southeastern and east central Iowa. Hi.
Cool. Hey, my brother-in-law lives there.
Right on.
Nice.
I found out why area code.